The following podcast has been recorded under the influence of alcohol. While not intentionally offensive, things are said, feelings may be hurt, and so not given. Clearly, it's the beer's fault.
The Good Beer Bad Movie Night Podcast.
Welcome to episode 78 of Good Beer, Bad Movie Night, the podcast dedicated to movies of questionable quality and the frosty adult beverages that help make them tolerable. Tonight's feature presentation from 1985 is the classic Legend, starring Tom Cruise, Mia Sara, and the legendary Tim Curry. This one's Dave's fault because I think I mentioned it in passing once and he just about jumped through the roof saying, me, I want to do it. So this is Dave's fault. So anyway, Dave's going to do the 6-minute synopsis where he's going to take 6 minutes to summarize this movie, Bone to Tip. That's a horn reference. I thought there was a name for where the horn attaches itself to the skull, but there isn't. And I was going to do... Anyway,
interesting. You could not find a scientific biological word for the anatomy of a mythical creature. That's shocking to me.
Well, the horn. Yes, never mind. Cows have horns. Why isn't there like the area that's attached to this? Anyway, I'm out of here. And if there is a scientific name, please correct me because I am frequently wrong.
I believe it's called the nubby nub.
Anyways, we're going to wrap up the evening a little bit later with our six-pack rating, where we let you know just how drunk you need to be to enjoy this film. My name is Pete. Hello, everyone. We are doing this remotely because our dear Kathleen has gotten some...
I have the fungus among us.
Yes, for sure. So we all want to stay far away from her.
Poor Kathleen.
Love to see you and your lovely face today here on the show. Troy is with us also from that same diseased household.
Hello.
So far, he has avoided the fungus. And Dave is here. Hi, Dave. This is your fault today. What's going on?
Yay.
It's so exciting. Let's just dive right into it with our 6-minute synopsis. So once again, six beers in a six pack. Dave is going to get 6 minutes to give us the lowdown of the film. And if Dave, you are ready, shall we begin?
I guess.
All right. Be so kind.
3, 2, 1, go.
We open on night in an enchanted forest, cut to a dark stone chamber where a deep, ominous voice declares, "I am the Lord of Darkness. I require the solace of the shadows and the dark of the night. Sunshine is my destroyer." And so on and so forth. The malevolent speaker, yet unrevealed, is seated in an enormous chair. Blix, a horrible, loathsome goblin who frequently speaks in rhyming iambic pentameter, enters cautiously. The Lord of Darkness, concerned over a powerful presence of purity in the world, orders Blix to find and destroy this presence, two unicorns, and retrieve their horns, since he himself can't go out in the sun because of some skin condition or whatever. With the sun, with the destruction, darkness will claim the land forever, no sun, blah, 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 blah. Because unicorns can be lured only by innocence, Blix and his goblin buddies depart to find this bait. Cut to daytime in the forest, which is absolutely thick with floating pollen and other particulates. Princess Lily, played by a very young Mia Sara, visits her friend Nell's woodland cottage. They exchange pleasantries, then Lily runs off to a real purpose, to hang out with Jack, her wild forest boyfriend, played by a post-Outsiders pre-Top Gun Tom Cruise. Lily and Jack, who's dressed like Peter Pan, prance around the woods doing bird calls and other woodland nonsense, unaware that the goblins are following closely behind. Jack's like, "I want to show you something I totally shouldn't," and takes Lily to a hidden glen in the forest to see the unicorn splashing around and making whale sounds. Enthralled by their beauty, and against Jack's warning, Lily engages full Disney princess mode, leaving their hiding spot and singing a song while approaching the unicorns. Startled at first, but drawn to her innocence, the unicorns cautiously approach and Lily touches the stallion's muzzle. Taking advantage of their momentary stillness, Blix shoots the stallion with a poison dart. As the unicorns bolt in terror, Jack angrily admonishes the princess for committing a forbidden act against such sacred creatures, but Lily's like, "I don't care, I just want to touch one, yeah, let me sing a song," and Jack's like, "Oh, for fuck's sake." Cut to the top of a high waterfall where Lily tries to console Jack. Removing one of her rings, she declares, "I'll marry whoever finds this ring," and chucks it over the waterfall. Without hesitation, Jack dives after the ring in slow motion, plunging into the water below. It's at that moment the weather immediately grows cold and stormy as the injured unicorn succumbs to the poison dart. A panicked Lily cries out to Jack as the water quickly freezes over, trapping the yet ringless Jack beneath the surface, and then she just fucks off because fuck Jack, apparently. The goblins catch up to the injured unicorn lying in a considerably less enchanting glen, where the Blix chops off its horn. Jack manages to break through the ice to find the world covered with snow and darkness, but Lily already fucked off back to the cottage without knowing if he was okay. In the cottage, she finds everything frozen in place, including her friends. She hides as the goblins approach. Blix uses the horn to blow some stuff up. It's like, sweet. Lily overhears them and learns that darkness, snow, and all the bad stuff that happens is because of her axe, and they're able to fell the unicorn. Now realizing she's the dick in the story, she vows to make it right. Back in the woods, a despondent Jack lay next to his fire, where he's discovered by Gump, a shirtless fiddle-playing elf, and his fairy friends Screwball, Brown Tom, and Una, a tiny talking will-o-wisp. Gump's like, "I know everything, but I don't know what's up with the snow and shit. Do you know anything about this?" And Jack's like, "No. Well, maybe it's because I kind of sort of let Lily touch a unicorn, which is the one forbidden act that would cause all of this stuff to happen exactly. But I did it for love, so that's cool, right?" And Gump's like, "No, not cool. So if you answer this riddle wrong, I'll kill you. But if you answer it right, I'll throw a giant hissy fit, and then we'll drink fairy wine and be friends." Jack answers correctly, so Screwball procures a bottle of fairy booze from under his hat. Hat booze. They toast, and off they go to help the unicorns and Lily, I guess, even though she totally let Jack to drown. Following the whale sounds, they find the male unicorn motionless, horn removed, covered with snow, and the mare at its side stamping concernedly. Jack offers a fruitless apology, explains the world will remain all cold and gross until they return the severed horn. He's like, "We need a champion to find the severed horn," and Gump's like, "You just volunteered, idiot. Una will take you to the Cave of Hero stuff, Brown Tom will guard the unicorns, and me and Screwball will wait here doing nothing." Once Jack and Una are alone in the Cave of Hero stuff, Una reveals herself as a normal-sized person and is like, "Shh, our secret, because I'm totally into you," and Jack's like, "Okay." Meanwhile, in a cave somewhere, there's lots of caves, the goblins gloat over their grisly plies. Blix, now drunk with power from the horn, is like, "Now I'm in charge," and suddenly darkness appears behind them. Blix is like, "Yep," and drops the horn. Blunder quickly snatches at the horn, like, "Fuck you, darkness, I'm in charge," and darkness is like, "Nope," and chucks Blunder into a pit. He yells at the others, like, "This isn't a toy, idiots, did you kill the unicorns?" They're like, "Yeah," and darkness is like, "Bullshit, the sun's rising, go kill the unicorns, because, you know, my skin condition." So Lily finds Brown Tom guarding the unicorn, and Tom's like, "This is all your fault, asshole," and Lily's like, "I know," and the goblins return to finish the job. Despite Tom's valiant effort, he is shot in the head, and the goblin take Lily and the unicorn. The others return to find Brown Tom, who turns out isn't dead, was only shot through the hat, which destroyed his hat booze. And he's like, "They took him," and they're like, "Yeah, no shit." And they follow the goblin tracks through the creepy evil swamp where Screwball is pulled into the water by some unforeseen evil. But he sputters back to the surface, apparently unharmed. Suddenly, tall, lanky swamp hag, Meg Mucklebones, bursts through the water, spitting and retching. "Yeah, foul tasting fairy!" But when her eyes fall on Tasty Jack, she quickly is like, "Ooh, I'm going to eat you, boy." But Jack manages to distract her with a clumsy appeal to her vanity, like, "You're hot, and look at yourself in my shield." And she's like, "No, wait, really?" And he's like, "Nope," and he decapitates her, and he's off to the castle. And they don't make it far into the castle before they drop into the trap door, and they find, who's this? Blunder, he's in there. But he's like, "Hey, no, I'm your friend." Like, "Oh, no, you're not." And then, "Yes, we are, but I decided to go goblining, but this is where we are now, and time makes fools of us all." And then he's taken to go get cooked into a pie. Meanwhile, Lily's imprisoned in the castle, but yet allowed to roam around freely because apparently even darkness is like, "Dude, I'm totally into her." He tries to win her affection with jewels and a dancing evil princess gown until Lily, who's freaked out at first, but starts kind of getting into it, and poof, she's wearing the dress and goth makeup. She notices a new getup in an enormous mirror when, holy shit, through the mirror, an amazing reveal comes darkness himself, a huge 10-foot red-skinned demon, enormous and muscular, with giant horns, yellow cat eyes and hooves, and somehow still sexy because Tim Curry. He's like, "You killed the unicorn, so we make sense together." And she's like, "Fuck that." And darkness spills it about how the sun kills him and he needs the dark to live. Through a crack in the door, Jack and Company overhear this whole exchange. They're like, "Hey, let's use mirrors to bring the sun down and fuck up that darkness guy." And they head to the kitchens and free Blunder and his pie trimmings, killing the ogre cooks, grab shiny platters, and set up a whole death ray mirror thing with Screwball all the way up at the top where he falls asleep. Back in the Great Hall, darkness is like, "Let's just talk." And Lily's like, fuck yourself. And darkness is like, "No, let's do it." And she's like, "Okay, fine, but I get to kill the unicorns." And darkness is like, "Oh, yeah." Jack finished setting up the death ray, and there's no sun. Una races up to figure out what's happening. They find Darkness and Lily in the chamber where the unicorn's in prison, and Darkness is like, stab that unicorn with its mate's horn. And Jack almost shoots her, but he's like, nah, I trust her because she has a good track record, right? Luckily, he's right, and instead of killing the unicorn, she frees it. Darkness knocks her aside. Jack jumps in. They have a really long fight, which really should be short because he should have fucked them up. He stabs Darkness, and then suddenly, boom, sunshine, because Una succeeds and Screwball shows the shrine to Deshre. Bad guy gone, unicorn free. Lily's now unconscious under some kind of special spell where a huge angry demon hits you in the face. Gump's like, well, that's that. We'll take care of the unicorn. You deal with Willow, what's her name. Now fuck off. So Jack takes Lily back to the waterfall, somehow finds her ring, puts it on her finger. She wakes up and she's like, oh my God, was it all a dream? Jack's like, no, you fucked everything up, but it's fine now. Thanks. Love you for some reason. End.
7 minutes, 14 seconds.
Oh, damn it.
Sorry.
I knew that was going to run long.
So here at Good Beer, Bad Movie Night, if you go over your 6.5 minute synopsis, you get to sing a song. We do have a 30-second grace period, but Dave has exceeded said 30-second grace period, and we get to be regaled by a song.
Okay. Oh, fuck. Okay, I'm going to need a second.
This isn't your first song, is it?
I was the first one to sing.
Very first time we implemented this.
You do right. Twist and Shout from Ferris Bueller, since that's the only other movie Mia Sara was in that I'm aware of.
Right.
Okay, how about this? Okay. Legends can be loved forever, teaching us to reach for goodness sake.
What?
Legends
what?
Can God's be great. And forever loved by the sun, loved by the sun, loved by the sun. Okay, that's it.
I love that the cattail looks like a microphone right now.
I was actually trying really hard not to say, to stop you, like, why are you wet?
Ew, Matt? So you've got a wet That's pussy wet. On your lap, huh?
Gross.
Ew.
That song was Loved by the Sun off of the Legend soundtrack by the band Tangerine Dream, which leads into our next beer.
We'll go get a beer. Dave, I was actually hoping you would do, here we go, a gobbling among... The cave's so dark. Here we go, a gobbling. That's all I had.
Yeah, that would have required some sort of musical composition, and I wasn't doing any of that.
Well, you said they were going gobbling, and I just instantly thought, oh, that'd be a fun song to sing.
Oh, my goodness.
Or not. Okay, we're headed to our first beer. Let's do it.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Okay. Dave has, you've procured a beer I have not had, but a brewery I am quite familiar with. Do you want to let everyone know?
I can only do one thing at a time.
Okay, I was just going to ask if you could do. You're pouring, you're cracking it open. Anyway, this is from the Kentucky Brewing Company. This is their Tangerine Cream Ale. And the website says Kentucky Tangerine Cream Ale has a refreshing white head with a slight hoppy body and luxurious mouthfeel. Moderate balanced maltiness, pleasantly sweet with notes of vanilla and tangerine. So as explained to Kathleen, this might very much be like a creamsicle. This might taste like a creamsicle. Now
aged in bourbon barrels, according
to yes, me. that's what Kentucky I'm sorry, the Lexington Brewing Company is famous for doing all their beers in bourbon barrels because they're down there in Lexington, Kentucky, and they get bourbon barrels all the time.
And they have a really good bourbon.
It is, ladies and gentlemen,
last month.
Last month?
No.
Maybe.
No,
I don't think so.
Ago. I feel like we just did these people.
Their Kentucky bourbon barrel ale is up there with some of the best craft beers in the country. It's delightful. It's also to be respected because it is a high ABV. This one, however, is a delightfully crushable 5.5%. I do not see an IBU on the website.
15 is the only one I could find. Okay. I had to search around for it.
That leans malty, right? According to the Gary. So Dave, why did you grab this one? Out of curiosity.
Well, we watched the director's cut, but the original cut, the theatrical release of Legend, the music, the soundtrack was very different. So instead of orchestral score, they had a band do a lot of this like electronic music, and the band was called Tangerine Dream. And so I saw this at Perfect Pour Bottle Shop in Dublin, Ohio. And I was like, oh no, I can't pass this one up. Especially because the Tangerine Dream soundtrack on the theatrical release of Legend, it's like the sound of my childhood.
Right.
Like that, it invokes all these memories. And that's one thing I didn't like about, one of the things I didn't like about the director's cut is that it didn't have that music. And, you know, I understand. If you're a fan of Stranger Things, the show on Netflix, a lot of the music they play on that show is inspired by stuff like Brian Eno and Tangerine Dream and things like that. So if you ever hear it, it'll be like, oh, this reminds me of, you know, Stranger Things.
Tangerine Dream did the Risky Business soundtrack as well, and a couple others.
Another Tom Cruise movie.
Yeah.
This is very, it smells like a dessert bread.
Well, that's an interesting way to say it. Dessert bread. Right.
So like a fruit cake. No, fruit cake isn't right.
Banana bread, maybe? The vanilla is really coming.
There's a lot of vanilla in this beer.
I think it smells a lot like a creamsicle. It smells like a creamsicle and whiskey.
Yes. The vanilla is probably coming from that too, from the barrels.
That's it. Kathleen nailed it.
And by the way, you have an excellent memory. We did the Lexington Brewing Kentucky vanilla barrel cream ale when we did Speed 2. Just a mere 3 episodes ago, I guess.
Right. Well, that was with Charlie and Nate from Getting Back My Action and Horror Movies. So that was a very good plan. But I am thoroughly enjoying this. I'm not sure how many I could drink. It's not giving me tar belly right now.
No, it's not that sweet.
It's got a pretty tight carbonation, which is, I think, maybe contributing to the creaminess.
Yeah.
But it's not syrupy, which sometimes that happens, right?
Yes. Charlie, exactly.
Oh, yeah. That's nail in the head.
I would love this pushed with nitro, Dave. What do you think?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
But even then, I don't know if I could go through more than 2 of them.
No, this isn't. Even at the low ABV, I don't think this is a session beer.
Pushing it through nitro would smooth it out, right?
It should. It should give it an even more creamier feel.
Yeah. Because there is a little bit of a sharpness to this. It's got maybe kind of like a citric acid sharpness, just a tiny bit. But that's good. I do like this.
This is quite good. This is almost a dessert beer, but not.
If it was stronger and maltier, it would be a perfect dessert beer.
I like this. Well done, Dave.
You know, I think that for some people, this would be a crushable session beer. I don't know if I could.
I want to say this is a patio beer, but I almost want to say this is a fall patio beer. It's not pumpkin by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a little, it's not quite as refreshing as like a Shandy might be or any of the more lighter citrusier beers.
Citrusier?
I think I could enjoy this like any time of year. This is delightful. I've never had this, and good job, Dave. Wonderful.
I definitely think this is a beer that needs to be really cold. Like I feel it warms up. I mean, it might be good. It might still have good flavors that come through when it is like a little warmer, but I feel like that will lead to more of that sugary tar belly kind of thing feeling as it's warmer. I don't know. I just feel like if it needs to be really, really cold. It's good. I really like it. Oh, I mean, I hope it tastes this good when I can actually really fully taste things, but the way I am right now, it tastes really good. And I can smell it, which is a benefit from a few things this morning when I couldn't smell anything.
Oh. So bad.
Oh, poor Kathleen.
I know, it's terrible. So I have a question.
Oh.
Yes.
If the theatrical release of this movie has the Tangerine Dream soundtrack, which is for you the soundtrack of your childhood, why did we have to watch the director's cut?
Because I don't actually like any of you.
You don't actually have to what? Oh, any of us. You have to say the insults loud. Remember what you're fighting through over here. So if you want me to hear it. Yeah,
Tom Cruise does like this director's cut better than the U.S. theatrical release.
Well,
and the soundtrack we heard was Jerry Goldblum?
Goldsmith.
Goldsmith, who is super famous in movie soundtracks.
I have no problem with the soundtrack one way or the other. I'm just trying to understand why we watched the director's cut.
The director's cut is a more complete movie. Honestly, a better movie. It's more in line with Ridley Scott's vision. Oh yeah, this is directed by Ridley Scott, by the way.
Right. Mm-hmm. I read the little thingy that popped up on the screen when the movie started. There was a little explanation.
How we got the answers print.
Yeah.
This is not, so it's not the highest quality transfer just because it's not the highest quality print.
Oh,
but
right. Oh, so you guys streamed it. Where did you stream it?
We didn't. We borrowed Dave's DVD Blu-ray.
I bought the Arrow Blu-ray, heaven help me, that has both the theatrical and the director's cut and a bunch of other extras on it.
Say, that's what this had too.
I didn't like the movie well enough to dig through all the extras.
No need.
Yeah.
That's why we got Dave.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I should have just borrowed it from Dave or the library.
It's interesting that 2 months in a row, we've done movies that I am completely stumped by, in my opinion. I didn't necessarily dislike this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I won't watch it again.
Right there with you. This movie is beautiful.
It is. It's really pretty. Gorgeous. There's really cool makeup and costume and creatures and characters. Ah. But kind of like the movie from last month, which was that
Streets
crazy
of Fire.
Willem Dafoe thing that we watched.
Streets of Fire.
The story is just like, meh. Like, I don't know. This one at least chronologically in basic storytelling skills goes in order and has a beginning, middle, and end, unlike that banana Streets of Fire where it was like at any second it could be the end of the movie and it would make as much sense as it did if you watched it all the way to the end. But I just, like, I stopped taking notes. Like, oh, my last note says, gross, darkness has the hots for Lily. Ew. And like, I don't know.
Okay, believe it or not, if you watch the theatrical cut, the movie makes less sense. Like, having the hots for her makes less sense. Everything makes less sense.
I mean,
like,
it doesn't make any sense on this one, but.
But imagine less sense.
Yeah.
And that's how.
So did you see this in the theater, Dave?
I did not see it in the theater.
Okay. Okay.
I saw the theatrical release on VHS. And then later I found out that there's, I mean, way, way later, I got to see the director's cut. I'm like, oh, this is cool. This is different. Again, it's a theatrical release that's stuck in my head, and especially the music. This movie is, I think, one of those films where you kind of have, you have a window to see it. And if you don't see it in that window, it loses a lot of its magic. I saw it at a time when, you know, a lot of these movies are coming out, things like The NeverEnding Story and like these sort of fantasy movies are coming in. It was, it could capture your imagination when you're a kid in the 80s. But when you're us in the now, you're watching it with 2023 eyes and you're like, what is this? Okay.
Yes.
A lot of it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I knew this, like, since most of you had not seen this movie, I knew that was going in. So I was really curious as to what impression it would give you. And I didn't think it was going to be a good one.
Well, like I told Troy, I was a little sad that the way our life and schedule laid out that we didn't watch this until just this past Thursday, and Millie had a science test on Friday, so she had to study for a test, so she couldn't watch it with us, because I would have been interested to see it, even though I do think she's at 13, almost 14, still a little outside of the target audience to find all the magical in this.
Too old or too young?
Too old. Like, she's a little too
old. I agree with that.
Yep. She's getting there. She's
like, she could still be like, oh, okay, like, this is, like, you know, but
she's a young 13.
She is, but at the same time, I feel like 7 is the target, like, perfect age to find all of the, you know, to find the goblins scary, and especially that black witchy thing that pops up out of the water.
Meg.
She was freaky.
Played by Robert Picardo.
Yeah. So like to find that stuff scary, to find, you know, Lily, think of her as a positive princess character instead of, you know, a dizball skipping through the woods, and to see it sounds weird to say romance when I'm talking about 7-year-olds, but to have that ethereal, like, ooh, kind of thought about Jack, and, you know, of course, the whole thing with the unicorns, and
it's very innocent love.
Yes,
it's not innocence. A sexual thing at all.
Yes, absolutely.
Is a big thing. Mm-hmm. Innocence is a big thing in this movie.
Yes,
where like the idea of innocence, and like Mia Sara character Lily, she's supposed to be like this sort of this picture, this example of pure, like, purity and innocence. Of,
yeah.
Like, there's no guile in her. There's no malice.
Right.
And that's why the unicorns, who are also like this sort of beings of purity, that's why they could even get close to one another.
Right.
And I think you're right. I think that it's just scary enough so that someone of, let's say, school age, primary school age, would find it scary, but not so scary that they can't watch it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, even the bad guys, the goblins, like, Blix speaks in iambic pentameter.
Like. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like this whole movie would have been written by Neil Gaiman if they redid it. Like, it feels very.
Ooh, I'm down for that.
Kind of genre.
Yeah. Which was, you know, super huge in that 1982 to 88 kind of time frame. I mean, we had this, we had Willow, we had, what's the David Bowie one with,
Labyrinth.
We had, oh God, there's so many, like, just of this, like, magical, mystical, you know, never ending story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even the Princess Bride to a lot certain
less
extent.
Traumatic than the never ending story.
Oh yeah. I'm not going to, like, we have not watched the never ending story with Millie. And it's because I don't think I should inflict that kind of childhood trauma on her.
If, like, we could take it, she can take it.
She cannot take it. Like, she is.
That's why we're damaged.
Right. Yeah.
That movie helped cause some
that's
of this.
That's what's wrong with us.
It's so funny because there's so many times when, like, Troy and I'll be debating whether or not a movie is appropriate for Millie. And we've been having this conversation more as she's gotten a little older, because she kind of wants to start watching horror movies. And there are some where I'm just like, absolutely not. And, like, there's just, there's a fine line in those things. And he's like, I don't know, we watch stuff like this as a kid all the time. And I'm like, Troy, our generation is literally famously badly parented. We're not supposed to do this. Like, how many TikToks do I have to send you about how nobody loved us? Our parents gave zero fucks, you know? And, like, I feel like, speaking for myself and definitely for Troy, as I know his parents, and I feel like I have a decent vibe about you guys too. We were even children of parents who actually did give a fuck about us, and we still got ignored for large swaths of time and got into things, you know, that would never be, weren't then appropriate for us to be doing, seeing, hearing, drinking, eating, whatever, you know? So I don't know. It just always makes me laugh when he's like, wow, we did it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, famously badly parented. Like, come on.
I brought Poltergeist over for my nephew to watch, and he's 8.
Yeah. Your nephew can watch Poltergeist.
Yeah. We
let Millie watch it. Not at 8. Troy just watched it with her.
Yeah.
Last year.
He put up a real brave face through the movie, but after the movie, after Uncle Pete left and he was going down to bed, he's like, so can the dog sleep with me tonight, Mom? Can you leave the light on, please?
Yeah.
Don't you want to sleep with me tonight?
And then you got a phone call. Thanks, Uncle Pete.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, 100%. I would have been like, Uncle Pete is spending the night, and Uncle Pete is sleeping with you tonight on the floor. No sleeping bag or pillow. He is going to be as miserably uncomfortable as you are. One of the reasons I asked why we watched the director's cut was twofold. And then when you brought up the music, you gave me another reason for it. But the first one was because we've been burned by director's cuts before, with unknowingly watching the director's cut of The Swarm.
The Swarm.
Okay,
you know what? This movie had not seen The Swarm when I chose it. I did not realize.
I said it was an unknowing director's cut. But, you know, we know now it was the director's cut. And now you're telling us to watch a director's cut. So I was a little bit like, oh, God, what are we going to get to? But I just...
Oh, no, trust me. When I found out that there was a shorter version of The Swarm, I was like, there's a shorter version.
Oh, yeah, trust me. We all... It's going on all of our tombstones. Here lies Kathleen, still pissed that there's a shorter version of The Swarm.
Maybe I should have had us watch the theatrical release.
I don't know.
We'd be able to tie some more stuff in, like the music and whatnot.
Maybe it was just me, but this movie was boring.
Pretty much.
That is also another thing that I knew people would think.
I am people.
Yes. Everybody is people. Because a lot of the moments that maybe in the past needed time to land don't need that time now. So now when you watch this movie, you're like, okay, let's go. Get on. We can move forward from this. Like, we don't have to continue this conversation. It probably could have been wrapped up like without 30% of what you just said.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons why I chose this movie is because Tim Curry had been in my mind lately. Especially
there's
like
no cooler Tim Curry, right? I mean,
well, okay, the It movies came out, then the new adaptations of It came out with Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise, and the only thing you think is Tim Curry's amazing performance in what was all otherwise a shit movie. And then I recently watched Clue again, and then
that's time well spent.
Yeah.
Watching Clue.
And so I'm like, I need to see Tim Curry and you know, the Rocky Horror and all that stuff. And I'm like, I feel like I need to see Tim Curry in Legend again, because like Tim Curry's not a big guy. He's like maybe 5'9", 5'10". Like he's a pretty average guy.
Yeah.
But along with like the filming tricks and the camera angles, his performance gives a tremendous amount of mass and weight to this character.
You're so right.
And like the cadence of his speech, the speed, and like
his facial expressions and his cadence as he delivers his lines. I'm like, oh, that's Frankenfurter, baby. I mean, that's so like, I'm just fanning myself. Like, you are so goddamn like, sexy. Right.
How do you make a 10-foot tall red skinned demon somehow sexy? Well, he did it. It's really clear that that Tim Curry is he's a stage actor. Mm-hmm. And he brings all of it to that performance, and like the slow, deliberate movements and like the laugh, because he doesn't like go ha ha ha. It's like ha, 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 like a big, deep, bellowing, malevolent laugh. I'm like, God, Jesus, like he's terrifying.
But it doesn't sound fake. It sounds like he's laughing, which is
yeah.
I mean, like you, because there's a default villain laugh. Like, ha, ha,
right.
But that doesn't sound like a laugh, you know? That sounds like a, mm-hmm. a villain celebrating something, maybe. But, like, he actually sounds like he's cracking himself up. I mean, there, because I noticed that, too, that the laugh that he pulls in this, there's something mm-hmm. very
sinister.
It's big and real and really, like malicious. And there's a lot of evil in it. And, mm-hmm. and like you said, there's a lot of reality to it. Like, you can imagine, like, a spirit of evil laughing just like that. Like, he can't contain how amused he is at the situation. And also, like, the makeup alone was nominated for like Oscars and BAFTAs and all that stuff, and I've still to this day not seen anything better than the makeup of this movie. Just as good, yes, but not better. And especially with Tim Curry underneath it all, like emoting through it, like, oh my God. Everything, I mean, like the Blix, the Meg Mucklebones. The Meg Mucklebones is probably one of my favorite characters in that entire movie.
That character is so disgusting, and it's gross.
It's one of those like little moments of genius in the movie that makes me disappointed that the rest of the movie kind of is shitty. Because
it's filler. That exchange. That scene is filler, I think. That's part of how boring this movie is. That it just keeps going on and on, and they add this extra character in it, even though the performance is astounding by Robert Picardo. And the makeup is delightful. It's just an extra scene that we didn't need.
Oh, I feel like the movie would have been a much worse movie without it.
You think?
Yeah. They could have cut more stuff and just left Meg Mucklebones.
Yeah.
It would have been better.
Cut some of the skipping through the forest. Honestly, the whole conversation with Nell in her cottage. Like, what? Mm-hmm. There was no point to that. You could cut all of that.
I like that to show that she's not a princessy princess. She's a princess of the people.
She's
they're trying to build her up as not just some, like,
she's an awful person.
Royal.
Yeah. I'm not a regular princess, I'm cool princess.
Right.
I guess, but trying
to do something along that lines. I kind of liked that. They went really heavy on the unicorns prancing footage. They could have really
Especially like running around her in a circle.
There was a lot of movement, the moments that like they just kind of stretched out, and I think at the time that might have been better, but now as a movie, like, we don't need that. Like, we're like, okay, we get it. You've established what's happening. We can move on now.
But I think that I kind of remember feeling this way in 1987, 1985, 1986, whenever I saw this on DVD, or probably
in 1986.
See it on DVD in the
VHS.
You rented it from Blockbuster.
Yeah, because I did. And I kind of remember feeling the same way, like, I was impatient with the movie, and I was like, why are we watching this? And then when they got to the Tim Curry parts, and I'm like, oh, okay, now this I can get behind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so close to being a good movie, and I'm not sure. I honestly, a lot of it has to do with the man that we haven't talked about at all, Tom Cruise.
Tom Curry.
Yeah.
He gives nothing in this.
Oh, he's a wet blanket. He's
so flat.
Terrible.
He could have been anybody.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Any cute guy, that could have been him.
Yeah.
But Tom Cruise is hot. I mean, at the moment, like, he was, sure.
Well, he was in Outsiders, but there was every other cute boy was also in Outsiders. So we could have picked any other one of them.
Matt Dillon.
Yeah. Swayze, Macchio.
And he's so charismatic, though. I mean, Tom, you could watch Tom Cruise doing a lot of things that are kind of boring and still enjoy watching him. But there's something about this, and I think it was because he was trying to put on this innocent, like,
wild
lost boy.
I said he was Peter Pan meets Mowgli.
Yeah.
That's really good. He's a forest boy, I think.
Yeah.
But he didn't know the elves that lived in the forest? Question mark.
Right. So it's like, really he's a homeless villager.
Yeah.
He's a bum.
Yeah.
He's a bum.
He's a homeless villager that the princess has the hots for, that her dad is never, he does not have great hair.
I liked his hair.
Here's the thing. I was so annoyed with how much it was in his face, how much eye contact through the bangs was his acting mode in this movie. Like, everything was, the hair was in his face, and he's like side eyeing you through everything. And I was just like,
oh, that's what the kids like.
And
Keanu Reeves built a whole career on that.
No, no, do not.
Brad Pitt.
No,
the 90s was full of cute boys peering through their bangs.
Okay, except this is 85.
I didn't believe that Tom Cruise was much of a hero. Like, they gave him that sword and the shield and the nothing of his performance convinced me that he was any sort of a action dude. Like, his Mission Impossible stuff, totally believe it. He's bitching in all those movies, even though the movies are kind of stupid. But I totally believe it there. But here, you're just a pretty face in this shiny armor, and I don't believe for one instant you can defeat this darkness.
No, it's because he's not valiant. Like, the whole purpose of this is, like, the innocence outweighing the darkness. And he's not innocent. He's just a bum who lives in the woods. Like, you know?
Truly, honestly, that could have been any character. And if they had, I mean, given him a real path, given him a real, like, arc.
Some background.
Yeah.
No one had an arc, did they?
I mean, technically, Lily kind of goes from dumb in the woods to outsmarting darkness. Yes. In order, you know, but then she goes right back to Dum Dum in the Woods when she wakes up. Oh, it was a dream. Oh, I'm just a Dum Dum in the Woods.
Oh, again. It was a dream.
He's like, yeah, it was a dream. You totally didn't fuck up the whole world.
Oh my God.
Right, exactly.
Which is actually that's the director's cut ending. In the theatrical right. release, everything's like, oh yeah, everything's fine. And then, you know, they all like wave
happily ever after
or whatever.
That whole scene between them doesn't happen.
No. In the theatrical release, it's different.
So they do ride off into the sunset, happily ever after or something in the theatrical release.
That scene, I sort of got led to believe that she was like, oh, hey, you found the ring. Yeah, my dad is never going to let me marry you, you tree-climbing bum.
That's totally like, I never thought you could have done this.
And yeah, and he's like, I love you. And she's like, okay, can I come play tomorrow? And he's like, yep, Dum-Dum in the Woods. Dum-Dum in the Woods is going to get married off to some 80-year-old guy in Spain so dad can have more land or stop a war. Right. So cool. I love
and
this.
And then poor Jack, his heart is broken to a million pieces and he goes dies in the woods.
Right.
Maybe he hooks up to Luna, who knows. The one thing about the theatrical release that I kind of wish they had included in the director's cut is at the end of the theatrical release, they're all like literally running off into the sunset. But like there's a cut of darkness, Tim Curry like with bright green eyes, like like laughing like he was never defeated. Like he's still around. I'm like, that's cool because
I darkness want that. Isn't defeated.
Yep. Right. He's evil. So you can't kill evil, I suppose.
And that's honestly one of my favorite lines of the movie is toward the end there when he's about to, you know, get blasted into the void. He's like, what is light without darkness? We're brothers. Mm-hmm. You will never defeat.
Right. Me. Yeah. Right. That was a good line.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. My favorite line in the movie was, I think it was Gump that says it. And he's kind of frustrated with Jack at this point. And he says, squawk, squawk, no more talk. And I was just like, yes. I was like, I'm writing that down. I'm going to say that at school.
Say that at school.
Got me a new button to record. Squawk, squawk, no more talk. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, squawk, squawk. Squawk, squawk, no more talk. We need another beer.
Oh. Yes.
Look at you with the transition.
Mm-hmm. Kind of. That's a wonderful idea, so let's go get it. See you in a minute.
Who wants an orange whip? Orange whip? Orange whip? Three orange whips!
Okay. I can say with confidence this is one of the most beautiful cans we've ever had here on the cast.
The packaging in general on this is sublime.
The artwork is just gorgeous.
Ooh, it's cascading nicely too.
Wow, look at that. There are times I wish this was a visual cast as well.
Oh, never.
A video cast. Oh my goodness, look how beautiful that is.
You okay. Want me to shower before we come on?
No, I prefer you to be shirtless.
And pantless.
No. There are no pantsless.
Damn. You're no fun.
I'm a lot of fun. Pants on.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dave has dug into the depths of hell and pulled out Darkness Imperial Stout from Surly Brewing Company. This is a Russian Imperial Stout, which means it's got a big dick and it's going to fuck you over.
Gross.
It says IBUs are moderate. I don't know what that means, but it's at 12% ABV. So
yeah, it's 12%. So definitely,
We probably should have shared this.
Well,
oh my goodness,
it is. Tastes like death.
This is a tastes like death because it's
fits the movie very well.
Chocolate and coffee, two things that Kathleen hates. Massive Russian Imperial Stout contains waves of chocolate, coffee, cherry, and toffee, plus a non-traditional douse of aromatic hops.
Yeah, coffee, cherry, and coffee.
Box art, the box and bottle and can art are done by artist Justin. Oh my.
Bowen,
thank you. Ben? Maybe.
Or he has a lovely opera.
bottles are available exclusively at Darkness Day, Saturday, October 7th. box 12-ounce cans, go retail on Halloween, which means, Dave, you grabbed this. I mean, we're recording this on the 3rd, fourth?
I grabbed it when it became available.
Right. So this here is something else. Now, Surly Brewing is, it's out of Cleveland, I think.
Minnesota?
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of, hold on.
Minneapolis.
What am I thinking? Am I thinking Surly Girl, maybe? No.
Yeah.
What am I thinking
Surly
of?
Girl was a restaurant here in Columbus.
No, that's not what I mean. Huh.
Do you mean Muncie?
Savory. Or Savory. No, I got it all fucked up in my head. This is definitely not an Ohio beer. my apologies to...
Minnesota, they're very offended by you.
Yes, they should be. So since this is not where I thought it was coming from, this is clearly a brewery that I have yet to sample. Minneapolis, Minnesota. Thank you so much. I'm going to taste it right now. What are you guys tasting?
There are variants. There's definitely a lot of the darkness in Russian Imperial Stout, some of the bourbon barrel age. Wow. And there are different releases per year. This is the 2023 released Halloween. It is... if you could describe a beer as tasting dark, this is it. Looks like the malt profile is a two-row golden promise, aromatic chocolate, black, specialty, roasted barley, oats, brewers, crystal, DME. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, it's dark chocolate, too.
Yeah.
It's like that bitter dark chocolate. And there's coffee, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a little bit of metallic flavor in here, and that's not good. You should never taste
metallic.
Yeah, I'm getting a little metallic in mine.
I'm not getting metallic.
It doesn't
metallic.
Mean you are getting metallic in yours because these are canned separately, I suppose. You could say that.
Mm. And I see you're drinking it out of a tulip glass. That would be the correct glass to drink this.
I
concentrate the nose. Ooh, God, jeez. This is definitely a one at a time. This is a shareable can.
Oh, yeah.
At 12%, for sure. But as far as the flavor, it is a big, big flavor. This is all I'm going to have for tonight. Goodness gracious. Wow.
This could do with some warming up a little bit, too.
It is. I'm letting it sit here for a minute to warm up.
That's the kind of beer that will mug you in an alley.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yes.
That is good.
This is great with like a big steak dinner.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That would go.
I want
that.
A big potato and a big yummy steak and some asparagus. And this beer. And this beer is going to last me the entire meal.
And blue cheese on the steak.
Blue cheese. Yes. You're goddamn right. Blue cheese on the steak. Roquefort or something like that. Yeah.
Shit.
Gorgonzola or something. Steak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because this is
some big stinky crumbly cheese.
Yeah. Gorgonzola or blue. And some garlic potatoes.
I'm getting
garlic
hungry.
Butter on
top. Exactly. Now I'm hungry.
I am too. I chose this beer because the main character of darkness, I was looking through Perfect Pour, like they were very helpful. And I said, okay, looking for a theme, something that's darkness themed, something where the word darkness in it. He's like, I have just a thing. And he pulled me over to these cans. I'm like, sold. I would be surprised if these got sold in four six packs.
Well, the way the boxes are done, how would you?
Oh, yeah.
Individually
it came
boxed.
In a box. Yeah, like the can came in a box by itself individually. And I can tell you that the can was not inexpensive.
No, this
I think I can tell.
If it comes in this kind of packaging, Dave spent some money on this. This artwork is Lovecraftian.
Yes. Eldritch horrors.
Yes, oh very much so. It's just beautiful. We will post something on the Instas and the Facebooks to show you what these things look like. It's just beautiful. This is a treat, Dave. Thank you so much. I know Kathleen isn't keen on this, but
she's struggling through it.
I'm letting it warm up to see if I like it better when it's a little warmer because
it'll chill out a little bit. Okay, I've lost my mouth has gone numb or the metallic. I just needed to breathe a little bit. The metallic flavor has gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's very chocolatey, very not quite milk chocolatey, but definitely not baking chocolate.
Yeah,
no, it's like a rich dark.
Yeah, I didn't get chocolate out of it at all. All I got was coffee and cherry. Blech.
Getting a lot of chocolate and coffee. The cherry, I had to look for the cherry.
The hop used in this is a Warrior Hop, Amarillo Hop, and Simcoe Hop. Pete, could you tell us how each of those may contribute to the flavor profile?
Warrior, Simcoe, and what?
Amarillo.
All right, I'm going to be wrong. I really enjoy Simcoe and Amarillo, and I rarely have combined the two, so this is unique. Warrior typically has a punch you in the nose hop. So probably the most we're getting, the most of the hop aroma we're getting is from the Warrior because it's punching through all this malt.
So you'd say it was a stronger hop flavor?
It's a pretty strong hop flavor. The Amarillo and the Simcoe, if I remember right, the Amarillo has a real lemony citrus flavor to it. And then the Simcoe goes more vegetal and grass, the things that Kathleen does not like.
Correct.
But those two are delightful hops. You're riding the high country with those two hop styles. And I thoroughly enjoy it. Those two hops are not like a main hop. Like that's not a Northern Brewer hop or like a Cascade. It's not something you only use. You use that to enhance the hop profile and not just use exclusively. It's an enhancement hop. Yeah. Or instead of being your main source of bitterness.
Well, whatever the case, it needs all of it because I imagine without it, this would be almost sickly sticky malt.
Agreed.
And it's not sticky at all. Not really.
It's not thin. It is big, but it's not, it's not like you're choking it down at all. This glides down your throat. Just
like
relax.
With a lot of really high ABV beers, I kind of expect like a sticky molasses feel to it. Mm-hmm. And this does not have that. It's dangerously drinkable.
Dave, that's perfectly acceptable. Dangerously drinkable. You have two of these and you're not walking anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, I've already gone through almost like half of this beer in the time that we've been talking. I should probably
My time because I've got a long night in front of me.
Now, there is a statistic on here. It's OC and it's 29 degrees Plato. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, Plato is... Plato is a measurement of sugar. It's a different way to measure ABV.
Mm-hmm.
And some breweries, from what I understand, it's a more accurate way to measure ABV. So if you say it's this Plato, it has this much sugar in it, and you can do the math in your head, and it comes out to this ABV. Or you can just tell me what the ABV is.
Okay, so what does the C mean? Is it OC or 0C? Is it like...
Yeah, that's a good question.
The amount of sugar?
Plato is a measurement of sugar, potential sugar in the beer. I do not know what OC, like OG for. Is original gravity. So this might be original concentration, ? Not sure.
Hmm.
Like concentration of sugar in the solution
calories,
before.
Original calories?
Calories isn't... No one gives a shit about calories in beer. It might be concentration of sugar, like so that the original concentration,
or they might have just put
potential
the 29
sugar for
just put the 29 Plato under OC as other crap. You know.
Other crap. Sure.
They've got the Warrior, Amarillo, and Simcoe hops listed, and then they've got 11 malts. So this is, I mean, like. This thing is definitely malty.
Black patent, chocolate.
Pear. Yeah, Golden Promise, two row, aromatic chocolate, black, special B, roasted barley,
yep.
Oats.
Yep.
What this says to me, and Pete, you can correct me if I'm wrong, it tells me that this recipe has been tinkered with for years.
Yeah. This started here, and they kept dicking around with it, and it ended... what we have in our hands today, for sure.
Right.
There was a lot of, you don't just come up with a recipe like this right out your butt. You don't pull that out of anywhere. You fuck around with a recipe for a very long time until you are satisfied with it. And those are some very, very disciplined palates to be able to go like, okay, we need an ounce of this now in it. And it takes a long time to brew beer. 28 days from boil to bottle minimum. And a beer like this, a 12% beer like this takes longer to ferment. So it's it's probably maybe a 3 month fermentation rather than like a 2 week fermentation. It's I brewed a great big Belgian triple once that took 3 months to ferment. I couldn't believe how it just kept going and going. I'm like, it's doing its business.
Hey, look, settle down. Come on.
And, well, yeah. And I don't want to put it in the bottle too soon or those bottles are going to explode.
Right. So, well, they must have been. I've actually been looking through the website for like the past couple days now. Apparently, they've been making this for quite some time. The earliest one I could find was Darkness 2006. So they have been tinkering with this for a bit.
Damn near 20 years. I mean, well, 18, 17 years.
But whatever it is.
Whatever the math works out to be. This is delightful. I would be curious as to what a 2006 versus this one would taste like. And beer doesn't necessarily cellar very well like wine does. So I really actually don't want to taste that 2006.
You'd like to time travel back to 2006 and taste that one.
That's it. That is the best way to use time travel, Troy. I think that is that's why we should invent time travel, is to go try beers from the past and compare them to beers of the future.
Mm. Well, we could also go back in time and allow Ridley Scott to make the movie he wanted to make and not whatever this is.
It feels like Ridley Scott really gets hosed on a lot of his films. Like Dune was just, he started Dune, didn't he? And then gave up on it because of studio influence. And that's when David Lynch took over.
I think everybody's tried to do Dune. It's like this holy grail of movies.
Mm-hmm. But like Ridley Scott doesn't make bad movies.
Yeah.
He makes movies that sometimes they hit, sometimes they miss. I think for the most part, he gets to, at least lately, he gets to realize his vision. At other times, there's a lot of studio interference that sort of gets in the way of what he wants to do. Hence, a lot of times he does director's cuts, which I'm assuming that the studio also owns, but he's not allowed to release those theatrically. In this case, I don't know. I think that he just got a burr up his ass about making something amazing, and he had a very specific vision for it, and the studio was like, uh-uh, and they kind of dicked with it, and
his
sort of
vision
like
was
later.
Great, but his script was dull.
Weak.
Weak.
He definitely takes big swings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are moments of genius in this movie where like they could have done so much with it, and like they could have created a more compelling arc for any of the characters. Because at this point, the movie is just a really pretty movie with awesome makeup effects and a great performance by at least one person. And okay, can we talk about what we like and don't like about this movie?
Yes, please. Let's do that. I think we should go with Dave first. Dave, what do you like and dislike about this movie? Maybe what could you change about it? I can't think of anything.
Okay. Part of this, the first part, what I like about it, is going to be a little bit longer. Not because there's a lot of stuff I like, but because the stuff that I like, I have to kind of explain in detail. The stuff that I don't like is going to be a short one and done. What I like about it, obviously, like the production quality of the movie is amazing. Like the set design, the production design is awesome. The costumes are awesome. The makeup is awesome. But going into specific moments and characters, let's start with the Meg Mucklebones, but with Robert Picardo. That moment, which could be argued as superfluous, I get it. But that exchange in the director's cut, not the theatrical release, there's a lot of depth in that. Okay, so like one of the fairies gets like snatched and grabbed underwater and then spit back up, and then Meg like just bursts out of the water like, "Ah, foul tasting fairy," and then and it tells you a story already there, like she has eaten lots of stuff and she does not like the taste of fairies, which gives you an idea of her age. And then she sees Jack, it's like, "Ah, tasty morsel," or whatever, and he manages to kind of mess with her head in terms of appealing to her vanity.
Because
he shows her reflection in his shield, and he's like, "You're so beautiful, and you're so one so fair, you know, shouldn't eat somebody as stupid as me."
He's like, "You think me fair?"
And she doesn't believe any of it, but you can tell she's still kind of bought it, because she's still gonna eat him, but she's for a moment
amused by him.
Yeah, amused by him, and also like caught up in the idea that for a moment that she might actually be thought to be beautiful. Because at the very end, just like right at the end, she's like, give us a kiss, Jack, before dying. Like, and she goes after him because she's like, yeah, yeah, you think I'm hot, whatever. I'll play around with this idea, but I'm still going to kill you. There's like a whole history in all of that. And it's performance and some of the writing in that that brings that all together. And it's such a complete moment. Why couldn't the rest of the movie be like that? Where you are told such a big story in such a small moment. And the other part that I also loved was very obviously Tim Curry, who as Darkness creates such an incredibly powerful presence. And I'm not entirely sure how they did it. Like, with the camera tricks to make him look huge, great, fine. That's fine. But his performance, the deepening of his voice, I don't know if they filmed it faster and then had played it back slower to deepen everything, or if they did the opposite and they, you know, recorded it at high speed and gave his movements weight. But like, it's also his performance also gives that character a tremendous amount of mass and weight. Like, he's really swinging around a 10-foot frame. And it speaks to his training as a theatrical actor. And there's also the ideas of the innocence and like those themes that I really liked and that I really wish they had done better. This could be a really timeless movie if it was allowed to be. This production was actually plagued with a lot of problems, one of which, not the least of which, was a big fire in that studio. That, because a lot of, I don't know if you guys noticed, everything sparkled.
Oh, 100%.
Like, glitter was everything, even on the people.
Oh, so much and, like, glitter in this movie.
Body glitter and set glitter and everything was sparkly.
Mia Sara probably still glows a little bit.
She's probably still finding glitter stuck in places from that production. Like, a lot of the ice and stuff, the ice set decorations were made with paraffin. And paraffin is very flammable. And like, that whole set just went up in flames. A lot of this stuff was lost. A lot of things, like, there's a lot of breaks. I think that if this was allowed to be what Ridley Scott really wanted to be, it would have been a timeless movie. What I didn't like about the movie was literally everything else.
Everything.
I wish that the Tangerine Dream soundtrack was on the director's cut, but whatever. I'm okay with it. But that's what I like and dislike about the movie.
How about you, Kathleen?
I was just looking at pictures of Tim Curry and the costume for Darkness. I fully agree. Costuming, makeup, prosthetics in general, all of that was amazing and looked really good. That chair that he was trying to get her to sit in, I was like, don't sit in that chair. It's going to grab you.
It's like a pulsating grody chair.
Yeah, yes, yes. I was like, that chair is going to eat you. What are you doing? All of that, you know, was really, really well done. They're just, the thing that there wasn't enough for me is story. And like, I didn't give a shit about Lily or even really Jack. Like, I was just like, okay, let's save the unicorns because the unicorns don't deserve to be screwed over. And like, I like all the little woodland people, but these two humans, like, fuck right off. Nobody gives a shit. Like, I just, they were annoying and stupid. And
well, one broke the world and the other one was useless.
Exactly.
Correct. Correct. And
one fell asleep when you needed him the most. Like, what the fuck, kid?
Yeah. I don't know. I just thought it was dumb. So yeah, I mean, really storyline and like, some of the lines that these people said back and forth to each other, like, I was like, this is a 14-year-old girl who's obsessed with this kind of fantasy. This is the kind of shit that she writes in her journal. You know, like, I feel like some of the lines they got right out of somebody's Lisa Frank journal from 1985 that, like... you know, some twee 14-year-old wrote down. Like, I was just like, this is so... I mean, literally, my favorite line was a fancy way one of the elves told Jack to shut up. Like, that's, you know, I don't know. I didn't feel that way about Darkness's lines. I don't know. I was annoyed by Jack and Lily. I did not love the Ridley Scott super up close so we could see all of the dental work that these people needed done. And I don't enjoy acting through bangs as well. So there were a couple moments where I thought, oh, this is where Tom Cruise decided that he is badass stuntman. like, this is where he got the, like, flavor for this, because, like, now he's famously Mr. Death-defying stunts and all of the Mission Impossible movies.
He'll buy the whole production company so he can do a stunt.
Right, exactly. And it's like, you know, they add millions of dollars to the cost of these movies so that he can dangle off the side of a building in Dubai by, you know, dental floss or whatever. But, you know, when you could clearly see that the stunt was being done by Tom and not the stunt double, I was like, okay, this is where this started, is right here. So
that's cool.
Which I think was kind of cool, but other than that, he was stupid.
The beginning of some history, sure. Troy, what about you, bud?
There's actually a lot I like about this movie.
Oh?
I kind of like Mia Sara's. I mean, like, you guys are all giving her character shit, but, like, I enjoyed... I don't know. She's pretty, and
you think she's hot.
Yeah. I think that might be a big part of it. But, like, there's
There's no question.
Yeah. And of course, Tim Curry. And honestly, I really like Gump in this movie.
Do you?
Like, he's got these crazy eyes, and he's very much not
and mostly naked.
Normal. Like, he's something else, and I really dig Gump. I think he's a cool character.
He's down for no one's bullshit. That's for
sure.
That was
exactly.
David Bennett.
Yeah, and which interesting trivia I just found out when I looked him up. He's a year older than Mia Sara.
So wow. He was young. Well, he looked like a child.
Mia Sara was young.
Yeah, he does. He had some kind of disease that stunted his growth, apparently. Oh. So he looked really young for a long time.
That would have put him at like 19 when this movie was filmed.
Yeah, and he looks young. Looks like a kid.
He looks maybe 10.
Okay. There's something about the way he delivers his lines where he's doing everything very I kind of like it. I don't know why. So I like that. They're going for a fairy tale feel, which is not my genre. I don't like like fantasy for the most part. Like even Lord of the Rings, which is, you know, everybody's high watermark, left me kind of like, it was a good movie. It was okay. So fair enough. It's not made for me. I adore the look of it. That woods would have given my allergies the worst. I would not have been able to.
Always something floating around in the woods.
Yes, there is.
Down and thistle.
I was thinking about Kathleen the whole time going, she just died.
You would leave that woods with like a cloud of pollen behind you.
I would be fine in that woods in the spring because I'm allergic to everything that
in
dies.
The fall.
I'm allergic to everything that's coming to life. So.
Yeah.
One
of you is allergic to life and the other is allergic to death.
Correct. I am darkness itself.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you guys are married. Somebody gets to suffer at some point.
Exactly. Yeah, so I actually quite like this movie, and it's one of those things that, and it might just be the fantasy aspect of it. It might be I can't tell you why I'm not a bigger fan of this movie than I am, but I'm mostly impressed by what they did do.
You mean like in camera, on screen, like the production?
Yeah. I think it's a beautiful film. It's got some interesting stuff going on. And I think you're right. The story is just a little bit lacking there. Don't you wish you could talk to Ridley Scott and be like, what was your vision that didn't come through? Like, you had an idea in your head when you said, yes, I want to make this film. Because I know that he has...
Is there a book? Is this based off of a story?
This is an original IP. From what I read, he was tinkering around with some other IPs, and he just said, no, forget it. I want my own story. And he hired some people to help him write it, and I think they did him a disservice. I think he had a vision, and he gave it to these people, and they gave him what we see on the screen, and it just
talking about William Schwartzberg.
Yes.
He was a novelist, and he kind of helped with the screenplay. Helped. He got a writing credit.
He wrote the damn thing, I think. So I feel like a better screenplay would have been better.
Okay, well, and then Pete, what about you?
Just gonna say what's already been said. The production value was this movie is gorgeous. Christopher Page over at Time Shifters, this whole year he's been doing, well, that was pretty. And he's been doing movies all year long. It's genuinely hilarious what he's been doing. But all the movies he's been doing this year in 2023 have been, that movie was gorgeous. And it failed on so many levels. It's just wonderful. I'm shocked that he's not doing this one. He still has a couple of months to go. So maybe he's going to end up with Legend here. I might even have to holler at him. But this movie is gorgeous. I mean, the set pieces, the costuming, the monsters, the makeup, it's all beautiful. And I just think we get, outside of Robert Picardo and Tim Curry, I think we get wooden performances from the main characters, from Mia and Tom Cruise. It's just, they're not interesting people. I'm not rooting for them. I'm not rooting against them. Frankly, I think Mia Sara's character is kind of a shit princess, where she's at the beginning, she's stealing and playing tricks and going against, like, please don't do that. And she says, fuck you, I'm going to do it anyway. And goes and touches the unicorn and brings the end of the world. And she's like, I'm so sorry. It's like, you fucked up, woman. He told you not to do that.
She literally says, I don't care, I wanted to touch him.
Pretty much. And Tom Cruise is just not a believable hero at this point. I just don't care about the characters. I do care about Tim Curry and Darkness. As Darkness.
I wanted him to win.
I kind of wanted him to win too. I would like to see more Darkness. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Boy, it had everything going for it though. You had a director, you had actors, you had this amazing visuals, and you just laid an egg with the script.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we're all ready for ratings.
Time to rate it. Let's do it.
All right, so ratings it is. We here at Good Beer Bad Movie Night have a unique rating system. We have the six-pack rating, where we'll rate a movie from 0 beers to 6 beers. 0 beers means you need no alcohol, you enjoy the movie just as is. 6 beers means you have to be completely inebriated to even tolerate this movie. So with that being said, I'll start with myself. I chose the movie. I'm going to give this movie 1 beer. One, whoa, because it's not a good movie. And that's it, because it's not a good movie. But on the other hand, I watched the movie when it captured my childhood. I still love it, and all the things that I love about it, I still love. So 1 beer for me. All right, Pete, how many beers do you require to watch this movie?
This is 4. I did not care 4. For this movie. The visuals are so good, but even if it's pretty, it doesn't mean it's good. 4 beers.
Fair enough. 4 for Pete. All right, Kathleen, how many beers do you require to watch this movie?
I'm also at 4 for all the exact same reasons. It's super, super pretty. And if I had 4 big old 12% beers in me, I would be cackling like, I'd be fucking asleep is what I would be.
Right.
which I almost was just watching this, but I would definitely find a lot more entertainment in the way these people interact with each other if I had 4 beers in me.
All right. Again, with all style, no substance. Okay, Troy, you're the one that I was really curious about because you actually had seen this movie as a child.
Yeah.
So how many beers do you require to watch this movie?
Oh, man, I'm oscillating between 2 and 3. I think I'll go 3. Because it does break the worst thing to do with a movie is bore me.
Bored you.
Yeah.
But yet I wasn't entirely, the story bored me, but the movie didn't, because I was enjoying what I was seeing and I was enjoying some of what they were, like the people were doing, but it wasn't quite there.
It kept not getting there.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. And I was actually kind of expecting that. I knew that my rating was going to be a lot more forgiving than everybody else's.
That's all right. It's all good.
I completely acknowledge that this is a bad movie that I like, and nobody's rating hurts my feelings.
Exactly. So what's the rundown, Dave?
So that's 1 for me.
Yeah.
4 for you, Pete. 4 for Kathleen, and 3 for Troy.
All right, it's a little all over the board. Kathleen, how can people reach out to us if they want to correct anything wrong that I have said?
Or... like the name of the part of the animal where the horn grows out?
The nubby nub.
I genuinely...
nubby nub, exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen, I genuinely want to know if there is a word for the portion of the skull where the horn meets the skull, I suppose. I looked it up today and I couldn't find it.
Did you look it up on unicorns or did you look it up like...
No, I looked, rhinoceros happens to be hair instead of a horn. It's different.
That's true. Well, I'm sorry. Do you know for sure that a unicorn horn is not also hair?
No.
With your vast experience in cryptozoology, have you researched this?
A unicorn hair horn is magic.
It just magic. Appears.
That doesn't
it's
mean
the
that
the incision line.
Kathleen,
it's the incision line.
Do your job.
Okay. If you, I am doing my job, I'm giving you a hard time. That's my job.
An exceptional job. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I've been practicing for years. Uh-huh. If you would like to reach out to us, you can email us at gbbmnpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at Good Beer Bad Movie Night, or you can find us on the Facebook at Good Beer Bad Movie Night Group.
Group. Exactly.
Group.
So that was Legend. Thanks, guys. I'm not unhappy that we watched this, Dave. It just...
No, me either.
It land with me. Next month, who wants to announce it?
I was just going to say, so this is the first time we're going to do a holiday movie that's just going to be the four of us. We're not going to have any invited guests because of schedules. So look out, Hallmark fans. The Hallmark haters are coming after you when it comes to this film. But... I think Pete will either be pleasantly surprised or devastated.
Horrified.
Based on casting.
Or unpleasantly surprised.
I'm hoping he's pleasantly surprised.
So what? You're not going to tell me what the movie is?
Nope. I picked the movie based on inspirational conversations I have had with the three of you.
And I'm going to like this.
You know what, Kathleen? I leave myself in your capable hands.
trust me. Again, remember, this is I'm theming our episode as the Hallmark hater. So it's not like I expect this movie to be good, but
I'm a little terrified. I mean, you've been wanting revenge on me for a long time, so this is I'm a little afraid of what you've chosen.
Okay, well, you know what? If she's going to exact revenge, it's going to take more than one episode. So I think you're safe here.
Yes. It's Twister, the Christmas musical.
Son of a bitch.
Oh, boy.
Just kidding.
I'm drunk.
So are we all. I still have beer to drink, and I think let's just wrap it up, gang. That was a whole lot of fun. Let's do it again next month, and until next time.
Squawk, squawk, no more talk.
78.
It would be something that somebody could drink a lot of. Maybe not me, but I... What the fuck, Cat? The cat just started going freaking apeshit on my foot.
See how dark this tastes with just a slight soupçons of dog spittle.
Welcome to the Histamine Woods.
So we here at Good Beer Bad Movie Night have a unique rating system. Okay, 12%.
Yep.
Okay.
Keep that in. It's cinematic edging. Is that what this movie is?
Cinematic edging, yeah. Okay.
I don't know what that means.
Ugly one-horned mule.